Welcome to the Ian Bousfield Experience. I'm glad you're here. This series of podcasts are just things that come up in my mind when I'm thinking about playing, when I'm thinking about teaching, and general thoughts about music. There's some things here that I hope you'll find really useful. And don't forget, if you've got any comments or if there's anything you want to discuss further, go to ianbousfield.com. Hello, and welcome to a new start. This is the first video podcast that we've done, and we're giving it a try, and hopefully we'll carry on doing it this way. So it's a new start in many regards. I haven't done a podcast for such a long time. During Corona, I really got into doing them, you know, once or twice a week. I think it was actually therapy for me, to be honest. I think just to go into a room and talk to you, kind of a stream of consciousness thing, was really therapeutic for me. It was a tough time, wasn't it? And then Corona sort of stopped. I actually, during Corona, I took a lot more students on, and which was lovely. But then all of a sudden, everything came back. The concerts, the conducting, the classes. But the students were still there. So I finished up working far, far harder than I'd done before Corona. You know, we all vowed during Corona, I'm going to really pay attention to the important things in life. And the first thing I did was got hit with a freight train of work because it all came back. And of course, all of the projects that had been postponed, I felt obliged. Well, of course we have to do them, you know. So it was like rapid catch up. And so anyway, I'm here. The podcasts were one of the big casualties, along with my family at the time. But I have to say, I had no idea when I was doing the podcasts, the effect that they were having and the role that they were playing in some people's lives. Wherever I go, someone, a bassoon player or a viola player, comes up and says, thank you so much for the podcast. You know, it really helped me to get through a difficult time in Corona. And I think by me sharing my emotions and my feelings as to how difficult I'd found, I think it was maybe therapeutic for a few other people. So anyway, here we are. I'm back. It's nice to see you again, or to be able to see you this time, or you to be able to see me. You're in my practice room. This is it. This is my happy space. What you can't see is a whole row of trombones going down there and slides on the floor and lead pipes and mouthpieces. And, you know, I'm really envious of those people who play one trombone and one mouthpiece all of their life. You know, those people, well, what kind of trombone do you play? It's like one of those with a slide. I don't know, I've had it since I was 12. Once you start getting this sort of like Inspector Gadget nerd, like looking for that next 0.00001%, then you finish up with a room full of bits. And Christian Griego tolerates me because I have this amazing relationship. You know, I can say, Krishnan, I'd like a pink trombone with engraving of a unicorn on the bell. And he goes, okay. And so I play on my normal trombone, and he's the professional. He knows what he's doing. And I was thinking, maybe I try this on the tuning slide, or, you know, maybe. And he goes, yeah, okay. And then 2 weeks later, I was finishing it back on the standard equipment that he made for me. But anyway, I think it might be quite interesting at some point to go through my practice room and show you what I've got in here. And this is only the beginning of it. You know, the rest of it's up in the attic. Anyway, this is my happy space. I built this as somewhere so I wouldn't disturb anyone. So I could practice at 6 o'clock in the morning before I go on tour or something, which sometimes I do. Or practicing at midnight, which I never do. But it was a nice idea. Occasionally I'll get up and have a warm up before I go to work, and I don't want to disturb people. So we built this so I could do that, with the full intention of building another big room just down there But this is so great. I love this so much. It's not huge, but it's like bigger than your normal practice cube, I would say. And it sounds great, and it's cozy. It's lovely. It's cool in the summer, warm in the winter. It's really nice. So this is this room has nice associations. I always sit down here and know I'm not going to get disturbed, and I've got music stand and my music, and I think that's an important thing. Don't take the rest of your life into your practice room. You know, it's the trombone has always been the thing that I've turned to in my life. It's been the stable thing. Lots of other relationships have moved on, but my relationship with the trombone has always, you know, remained constant. I still love it just as much now as I did when I was 7 years old. I'm actually, at the moment, I'm going through a bit of, I would say, a mourning process. During Corona, I took more students on, as I said, and some extended, and there were bachelors and masters of different length of courses. And in all of my years of teaching, nothing like this has ever happened. 9 went in June. 9. I didn't just have the heart ripped out of my class. I had all of the limbs taken as well. 9 went. Now, okay, it was a little bit bigger than it would normally be. It was bigger than I would normally like because of Corona. I had 14. So I was down to 5. And I have to say, I did seriously consider retiring from teaching, because that would be a very nice, tie it off in a nice little bow, just do these last 5 this year and move on to something else. I don't know whether it's something genetic. My dad was the same. My dad kind of changed his career, but every 10 years he'd been started off. Well, very first, he was sweeping the floor at Roundtree's cocoa works in York, sweeping up all of the cocoa bean husks. He didn't like that, so he decided he'd better go and find a proper job. So he started working on a lathe at Vickers Instruments, making microscopes. And then he became a draftsman designer, unbelievably skilled at drawing. I mean, I've got his art all over the house. And then he moved on, did a teaching qualification. So a few years doing that. Oh, and by the all the time, he was a semi-professional trumpet player in big bands at the time as well. And moved on to become a teacher in a secondary school. And then he went back to study again. And he moved on to lecturing at sort of like degree level. And then he got involved in the very first computer-aided design kind of thing. And then all of a sudden, he decided he was going to become a wood carver. And a very, very fine one he was too. I think he basically just had this sort of monk-like attitude. He shames me in his absence still. But he would get up and he'd start working at 8 in the morning and he'd work till 6 o'clock in the evening, you know, 6 days of the week. And just believed in working. And he was a fantastic woodcarver. But anyway, I digress. He changed his career. And if you look at me, I was in England I was in the London Symphony 12 years, then the Vienna Philharmonic 12 years. And this would have been 12 years in Bern. If I'd finished up this year, it would be 12, 12, 12. And in the Ayurvedic calendar, in the Indian way of seeing things, apparently if you're spiritually aware, your life goes in 12-year cycles. I had no idea about that. I just read it recently. I thought about it and I thought, and then, you know, there were so many terrific people who contacted me and said, I'm interested in coming to your class. I'm like, I get a lot of emails from American people saying they're considering coming to my class. And I think, are you now? Interesting. Well, let's see. And so I have taken on 5 five new students and one euphonium player has transferred. First time ever. Euphonium player with a slide technique came in. Okay. Works. Anyway, so I'm actually, he's doing 50%, so I'm up to 10 and a half students, which is a good number. It's great. It's a good number. And they're wonderful. They're wonderful. And I feel a little bit like when I was a kid, there was this series on the television called All Creatures Great and Small. And it was about a Yorkshire vet called James Herriot. His real name was James White, actually. He was really was a vet, and he wrote a series of books about the life of a vet, a country vet dealing with sheep and livestock and that sort of thing. In a farming, rural environment, very close to where I come from. And there was an episode where there was an old sheep farmer. He was on his own. All he had was, he was an old guy, retired, just him and his sheepdog. Nah, the sheepdog died, you know, it was an old dog. And the vet could see the poor old guy going downhill as well. He wasn't going to be long. He was going to follow the dog, you know. And then one day, knocks at the old guy's door and he plunks this little puppy on his lap and said, I've got you a present. And the old farmer says, oh, nothing could replace old whatever his name was. And the vet said, well, okay, that's fine. Well, I'll take him back and we'll put him down. You know, nobody wants him. You know, we'll dispose of him. You know, it's like, and he looked at this puppy and he's like, no, but you can't. And he stroked him and said, we'll get through this. Come on, me and you, we'll get through this. And then, of course, he cut to a couple of days later, and then there's this sprightly old guy walking down the street, you know, with the dog on there, the little puppy, and he's like, you know, hello, Mr. Herriot, you know, life's good, oh, he's a lovely boy, you know. And I said to the, I relayed this student to my first student who walked through the door. I relayed this story to the first student who came through my door this year and said, you're the puppy. So this generation of students now, that's my puppy. I'm so fortunate. I took on five master students and four of them won orchestral jobs, nice ones, during their study. It's always a bit of a ordeal trying to get someone through to the end of their study when they win a job. It's better when they win a job a couple of weeks after they've done their final recital, but it doesn't usually work like that. So I've been absolutely fantastic. This new generation of students that are coming in are wonderful. But, you know, I've noticed over the years, every time I get some new set of students in, I always think, they're good. But they're not like the ones who just finished, you know. And then I think, yeah, hang on a minute. Yeah, but they weren't like that 2 or 3 years ago either. Ah, guess it must be working then. I realised something recently about myself and my attitude to life, and also about myself as a performer and as a teacher. I'm not very smart, so it takes a while for it to sink in. When I look back at, and if you do, is when you look back at the special moments in your life, the special things that happen in your life, the things that you really remember, they don't happen in a day or a week or a month. They happen in moments. They happen in a very short period of time. And when I think of the thousands of concerts that I've done, the magic happened in seconds, the moment you'll never forget. The slow movement of Bruckner's Eighth Symphony with Christian Thielemann and Vienna Philharmonic, where you think, if you're ever going to come back down, now would be a good time. Very good time. Where there's something incredible happening, or, and I don't care, would you think I'm crazy? Where Claudio Abbado was the only musician I ever saw, the only conductor I ever saw, who had almost like a halo around him. You could almost see the energy around the outside of him. I never saw that with anyone else. I never saw that with Bernstein. Never saw that with Schulte. Never saw that with Boulez, Haitink, as much as I wanted to, because I loved them. But Claudio, he had, but they were special moments. At a certain point in a Mahler symphony, it'd be almost like he was glowing. It's almost like there was some other energy, but it wasn't a day or a week. It was moments, fleeting moments. It's like I say to my family, you know, it's almost impossible to plan. Actually, I'm digressing a bit. To have a good time. It's like Christmas. How many times do you really enjoy Christmas? Actually, quite a lot, I have to say. Or your birthday, or whatever. So now it's like, everyone's healthy. Got a day off. We might be going for a walk in the Alps. Make a nice meal. Everyone's happy. And I say, hey, it's Christmas. Today's Christmas. We're having a great celebration. This is wonderful. I realize that the experiential side of life to me is everything. I get up in the morning and I drink Japanese sencha green tea with a certain water, with a certain magnesium content in it. And I do three runnings of the same tea. I do 30 seconds at 70 degrees, 1 minute at 80 degrees, and then 3 minutes at 90 degrees. And there, and I, yes, I do stand there with a thermometer. Yes, I do. And each cup is different, different personality. And my obsession with wine, with food, with everything, the best. Do I sound like Fraser Crane now, if anyone remembers that? He's coming back now, isn't he? Fraser Crane is June. The doctor of Cheers. And I realize I'm in search of the special all of the time. For me, life is about the special. It's about the look in somebody's eye. It's about the smell of some flowers. It's about things that you never forget. As a musician, if I do something in a concert that the people remember when they're driving home, I've done a good job. If they remember it in a week's time, then I've done an amazing job. And just on a handful of times in our life, we might do something that someone will never forget. And that's why I'm here. That's my motivation for music. And that's my motivation for teaching. I want to bring that to students to try and find the special moments within themselves, to create. Every minute that we have a trombone in our hands or an instrument in our hands, we have the chance to create something. I was conducting in the Odense Symphony, a brass concert, in, when was it, a couple of months ago now. And we did the Fanfare Liturgique by Henri Tomasi. And this is kind of like this hymn-like thing, right in the middle of the megalith of the last movement. There's a like a hymnal passage. And I said to him, I said, look, we could do something that we'll never forget. We have to take the risks. And with risks comes danger. There's no guarantees. In fact, there are. There are guarantees. If you take risks, it's going to go wrong. sometimes. We work as hard as we can to limit the number of times it goes wrong. But I said, if it goes wrong, it's my fault. I take the responsibility, but let's just play this as quietly as we can in the concert. Let's just take the risks. Let's just make it so beautiful and so still. And they did. And I still remember it. And it was special. So thank you if you're watching. And so the pursuit of the special is everything to me. I recently did some work with a very famous trombone player who said, the risks that you take, the risks. I guess I don't like making mistakes. Nobody does. But I can't bear not to try and do something special either. And when I hear my students, I heard a couple of them in a competition recently. One of them won the competition, which was greatly to my embarrassment because I was on the jury. I hate that. I don't like sitting on juries. Maybe when I've retired, when I have no, what I usually say, I don't have a dog in the race, is what they would say in English. I think I'm not so closely involved. But that student won the competition on one piece. One piece that was devastating. It was goosebumps, shivers, devastating. The rest of the competition, room for improvement, I think we could say, but we're still working and the improvement will come. Devastating. But you buy one with the other. And I realized when I listened to my students playing, I've had 9 final recitals recently, don't forget. And that I always say, I never want my students to sound like me. If they sound like me, I try and push them away. I don't want to clone anybody. I don't want anyone copying what I do. I want to show them what music is. I want to show them what expression is and how they find that within themselves. I also have a pretty decent toolbox if there are any technical issues. We need to do that as a teacher. But I don't like it if they sound like me. And I was always so proud, so happy that, you know, the Dutch boy still sounds like a Dutch trombone player, but he's much better than he was. And, you know, I want to make them, I want every student I have to become the best them that they can possibly be. Not the second best me. And to show them what this expression is. And it finally dawned on me that I'm not as smart as I thought I was because they become me. Because all of the final recitals will make you cry at certain points. And at others you think, okay, well, I guess that's why we practice, huh? And I'm the same. I'm the same. But they... Michel Becquet, the great Michel Becquet, who is not looking at this, I know that, because French people, I get the analytics. French people don't look at this. Partly a language thing, you know. I'm sitting here in the German part of Switzerland, and here they speak Swiss German, Standard German, or Standarddeutsch, English, French. Bit of Italian. Very broad spectrum of languages. My kids do, it's amazing. They're little kids and they're just so multilingual, it's incredible. And then if I go half an hour that way, there's the French part of Switzerland. They speak French there. And so do you. Otherwise, you don't have a conversation. So I see from the analytics, French people don't watch this. Although I guess now this chat, whatever it is, they'll do the translation automatically. Maybe they could. So anyway, Michel will not be watching this. The beautiful Michel Becquet, the man who walks into a room and everyone, in just the room, whole room smiles. He's just beautiful. Really a lovely person. You know, there's this, I'm digressing again, but I tend to. There's a Walt Whitman poem. The end of it says that, and in the end, all that remains are personal qualities. And for all of the wonderful, incredible people that I've had the honour to work with, when I think of Maurice Murphy, the great Maurice Murphy, those of you who don't know who he is, just listen to a Star Wars film. Or in fact, probably any movie track up until about 2010. The great, the most talented brass player that I ever worked with. And yes, I did work with all of the first trumpet players in the world, going right back to Herseth. He was the one with the most talent. Didn't practice, but he was the one with the most talent. I think of his playing as incredible, but it's him that I miss. It's the personal qualities. It's the look in his eyes, who he was. And so when I think of Michel Becquet, I don't automatically think of the wonderful trombone player that he was. I think of the wonderful person that he is. I think that's a lesson, isn't it? The personal qualities are the most important things. And anyway, he listened to a load of the exams in June, the marathon of final exams. And he made possibly the nicest comment that anyone has ever made about my teaching. He said, the one thing I've noticed here is that the students come up and sometimes they do the wildest, craziest, probably wrong thing, but they're all expressing themselves. And he said, I can see with them that they are free to play the way they want to play. And they're free to express themselves the way they want to. And that made me so happy. An expression and looking for these beautiful moments. You have to go through the process of kind of like, you know, the first time you stand up and improvise in public. And everyone says, it was great, don't worry, it's fine. Because they know it was your first time. Or the first time you decide to have a conversation in a second or third language. You're going to make some pretty severe mistakes, but everyone's understanding. You know, but for me, certainly the level of students, I don't care if it's musically inappropriate sometimes. I don't care if it's too wild. I don't care if it's, you know, I don't like it if it's distasteful. But I think it's infinitely better than someone who just goes up there and tries to survive. I think that's when I've been the most hacked off with myself, is when I've done a concert and just wanted to get out of there in one piece. Just don't screw up. Just get through it and get home. And that I've actually been more angry with myself than if I've made a mistake. But I think a lot of that really starts right here in the practice room. You can't just take risks in a concert. You have to, your mindset has to be searching, looking the whole time for these special moments. You have to be taking risks the whole time. We always want to play perfectly, don't we? We want perfection. That's what we're aiming for, perfection. But what is it? What is perfection? How can you identify it and how do you know when you've achieved it? Difficult to sort of put your finger on it really, isn't it? It's got to be perfect. Now, to the less evolved musician, particularly trombone players, playing perfectly, is not making mistakes. Hmm. That means you go pia or spum, and there's a ba ha, doga pa fa, doga ba ha. As long as you don't do that, it's perfect. I played perfectly. I don't have much to say for that attitude, I'm afraid, because there is a lot of horrible music making and nasty sounds happening in the name of perfection. I didn't make any mistakes. I played perfectly. But I'll try not to get too grumpy with the trombone playing fraternity, because we are, after all, a family. The first Michelin three-star chef in England was called Marco Pierre White in the 1980s. And he was Gordon Ramsay's teacher, you know. Gordon Ramsay, I suppose. There's a lovely story. Marco Pierre White comes from the same place I come from. He is similar in his delivery. He's more direct than I am. He's a very good teacher. He's very clear. And actually, there was a lovely story of him with Gordon Ramsay where someone said, Marco, is it true that you made Gordon Ramsay cry? And he said, no. Based on the advice I gave him, he chose to cry. Anyway, he was like Michelin three-star chef when he was a kid. Grew up with no money. Similar area to me, similar background, similar age. I think he's a bit older than me. And he, I think there's so many similarities between great cooking and great music making, because the ingredients, pardon the pun, are the same. We're dealing with technical abilities and creativity, producing an almost artistic, in the case of artistic effect. And he defines perfection in a very interesting way. He says perfection is a series of small things done extremely well. I didn't say perfectly, he said well. So that's having good basic technique as a chef. I'm not going to go into what they are because I'm a very amateur chef. I like it. But if so, what we're saying is perfection on the trombone, on any musical instrument, is about getting a series of basic technical things to a good level. And the whole thing comes together to create perfection. Perfection. Having a good slide technique, having a good articulation, having a good sound, playing musically appropriately, expressing yourself well, playing in time, playing the correct articulations, holding a tempo, playing the right rhythms, being stylistically appropriate. Doing all of those things well leads to the culmination of all that is what we describe as perfection. How you describe it, how you break it all down to something like that. As you may know, have been working quite a lot recently with Christian Lindbergh and Joe Alessi. And it's been really lovely at this age and at this point in our life. I said to Joe, I said, you know what? I think if you and I work together the whole time, I think we get on. I think we get on well. We like each other. And he said, great answer. He said, yeah, now things have turned out well for both of us. So yeah, we we get on well now. And the implications behind that is 30 years ago, we probably wouldn't have. Ha, I had a good flow running there. I was sort of going quite nicely through the subject, but because this is still a bit of a cottage industry situation, I'm afraid the memory card got full on the camera and shut down. So, and then time took place, and so that was a few days ago, so I'm back. Anyway, the next thing I was going to go on to is if you look at those different ingredients that we need to achieve this mythical perfection, it reminds me, it brings to mind the daily practice routine of Christian Lindbergh, or whatever it's called. You'll find it on YouTube if you haven't already seen it. And people come to me and say, it's a joke, right? That's not serious. People still think it's not serious. He's serious. That's how he is. Let me tell you. He told me off because we were going to leave for a concert. He was driving. We were going to leave at 3:30. And I got to the car at 3:31. And he went, 1 minute late, 1 minute late. And so he says, so we'll start practicing at 8:50 tomorrow morning. And you check 8:50. Out comes the mouthpiece. Actually, that's not true because, well, me for me, not for him, because he doesn't do mouthpiece practice. That's another subject for a podcast, isn't it? But again, going back to those personal qualities, he's just a beautiful guy. Christian is just, he's wonderful. He's just a lovely person. He's a beautiful heart. Anyway, if we apply those different things, they sort of like doing lots of small things to a good standard, not perfect, to a good standard, the whole thing comes up. Imagine if you got out of bed and had your daily practice routine of, I'm spending this time on my slide technique. I'm spending this time on my intonation. Do my ears, my lips, and the slide agree? Do we all have the same intonation? And by the way, a little tip. When people say, you know, you're not in the center of the note. What's the center of the note? How do you know what they say? It's not physical. But how do you know what the center of the note? I'll tell you what it is. When your ears, your lips, and your slide agree, your body goes, and so does your embouchure, so do your lips. You just go, nice. They just sit in position and they're got enough tension there just to hold the beautiful shape of your embouchure. And by the way, the embouchure is important. I've said that before. It's worth repeating. It is important. Imagine you knew, okay, slide technique, intonation, centering of notes, sound quality, articulation, and you're going into those little compartments and you're sharpening your tools up again, you know, getting that really, really good. If you organize yourself the way Christian does and the way he organizes all of his life, that would make a big, big, big difference, wouldn't it? Would it be really good instead of walking into a practice room and going, like I do in here sometimes, not very often. I usually know what I'm doing. Good. I think that's it. I think that's enough. I've got lots more ideas of things that I want to talk to you about. But in the meantime, if you've got interesting ideas, do write to me. Mouthpieces, that kind of thing, you know, don't. And I can't give you a lesson through a podcast. That I can't do. I don't know you. It's the thing about all of the information. People have said, you know, how do you feel about giving all this information out sometimes free on the internet? And I said, well, I have no problem with that because actually, I guess it's pretty much all out there, isn't it? It's all out there on the internet. And it's a dangerous thing because some of it's good, some of it is quite definitely not good. And sometimes what's good for someone age 17 is not good for them when they're 19, or the other way around. The key to development and the key to a good teaching is saying the appropriate thing to the student at the time. What does that student need to know? What do they need to know right then? And so just having the information is not key. The essential thing is knowing how to use that information. And it's a lifetime of work. How have I got onto this? I've rambled again, haven't I? I've gone rambling onto other things. Anyway, if you've got any ideas that you'd like me to discuss, let me know. And I think that's a good point to wrap up this first video podcast. Bye. So there you go. I hope you enjoyed that. If there are any issues that you found particularly interesting, don't forget to contact me, and always go to ianbousfield.com for lots more interesting stuff.